November 4th, 2008, champagne corks flew, strangers embraced on city streets, and Oprah wept openly on national television. Barack Obama had shattered what many believed was America's ultimate glass ceiling. Within hours, pundits declared racism dead, the civil rights struggle complete, America finally post-racial. But what if this celebration obscured a darker truth? What if Obama's triumph didn't signal racism's end, but rather its evolution into something more insidious, a form that celebrates exceptional Black individuals while leaving millions trapped in systemic inequality? This isn't about diminishing Obama's achievement. It's about recognizing that one man's success, however historic, doesn't dismantle centuries of structural oppression. The real question isn't whether America could elect a Black president, but whether that election changed anything for the 90 million people of color still navigating discriminatory housing markets, underfunded schools, and a criminal justice system that targets them disproportionately. Obama's victory exposed an uncomfortable truth about American racial attitudes. Many white voters supported him because he seemed different. Articulate, non-threatening, avoiding uncomfortable truths about racism. One supporter valued how he made whites feel good about themselves. Another celebrated that he doesn't come with the baggage of the civil rights movement, as if America's greatest liberation struggle was inconvenient luggage to discard. This enlightened exceptionalism represents racism 2.0, a sophisticated form that doesn't claim biological inferiority, but suggests people of color simply don't try hard enough. It allows whites to view themselves as principled rather than prejudiced, supporting the good ones while dismissing systemic barriers as excuses. No white politician ever needed to transcend whiteness, revealing the unequal burden on Black candidates to distance themselves from their communities. Obama became the Cliff Huxtable of politics, a Black man whites could embrace because he confirmed their preferred narrative about America as a land of unlimited opportunity where anyone can succeed through hard work alone. While Obama's face graced magazine covers celebrating post-racial America, the data told a different story. Black high school graduates faced higher unemployment than white dropouts, 15.9% versus 9.7%. College-educated Black men earned $54,000 annually compared to $72,000 for white peers, a 33% gap that hard work couldn't explain. African Americans held just 7% of management positions, despite comprising 13% of the workforce. Economic mobility was regressing. Young Black men in the 2000s earned 12% less than their fathers did in the 1970s, accounting for inflation. Nearly 45% of Black middle-class youth were projected to fall to the bottom fifth of income distribution, compared to only 16% of whites. Experimental studies exposed the mechanism. Researchers sent identical resumes to employers, varying only names. Greg and Emily received 50% more callbacks than Jamal and Lakeisha. More shocking, white men with criminal records received more callbacks than Black men with clean records. This wasn't about qualifications or effort, it was about race, pure and simple. Housing discrimination perpetuated inequality through systematic wealth extraction. Historical redlining and discriminatory federal loans stripped communities of color of hundreds of billions in housing equity, with 26 recording the highest discrimination complaints ever. The lending industry's predatory patterns were stark. 70% of white applicants with poor credit obtained mortgages, versus only 16% of Black applicants with identical credit. Banks rejected qualified Black applicants for traditional mortgages, then offered them subprime loans at substantially higher rates. Upper-income Black families in predominantly Black neighborhoods were three times more likely to receive predatory mortgages than low-income white borrowers in white areas. This exploitation cost communities of color over $4 billion annually, with Black communities losing nearly $500 billion in potential wealth. Housing segregation created cascading educational inequities. Black students attended schools with double the poverty concentration of white peers, schools 10 times more likely to have inadequate resources and uncertified teachers. This pattern persisted even for middle-class Black families whose children typically attended high-poverty schools despite their economic status. Educational inequality created systemic disparities from kindergarten onward. Schools serving white, affluent students spent roughly $1,000 more per pupil annually than those serving students of color, gaps exceeding $3,000 in major urban districts. High-poverty schools had three times as many uncertified teachers. The hypocrisy was staggering. Critics claiming money didn't matter in education simultaneously pursued tax cuts because money matters and sent their own children to private schools costing $20,000, $40,000 annually. Teacher expectations shaped outcomes profoundly. Black and Latino students were half as likely to be placed in advanced classes, even with identical test scores. Schools serving predominantly white students offered three times as many AP and IB courses, creating lasting college admission advantages. School discipline revealed the most alarming disparities. Students of color faced suspension or expulsion at rates 3 to 4 times higher than whites for identical infractions. For minor violations like dress code issues, white students received verbal warnings, while students of color faced suspensions. By high school, nearly 25% of Black male students had been suspended at least once, compared to 7% of white males. The criminal justice system became ground zero for racial disparity. In 1964, 2/3 of incarcerated people were white. By the 1990s, these numbers reversed, with 2/3 being people of color, a pattern persisting today. The war on drugs exemplified this shift. Despite whites comprising over 70% of drug users, people of color represented nearly 90% of those incarcerated for drug possession. Black youth were 48 times more likely than whites to be incarcerated for first-time drug offenses. Law enforcement practices systematically drove these disparities. Justice Department reports showed Black and Latino motorists were far more likely to be stopped and searched, though whites were more frequently found with contraband. These disparities extended into healthcare, where racism directly correlated with negative health outcomes through increased stress and heart disease. Doctors were less likely to order comprehensive tests, pain medication, and advanced treatments for Black patients with identical circumstances. Black patients were 60% less likely to receive critical cardiac procedures. Obama's presidency couldn't dismantle centuries of structural racism through symbolic representation alone. America's race problem remains fundamentally a white problem. Racism descends directly from white perpetuated slavery, indigenous slaughter, and systemic oppression. While legal structures have fallen, social consciousness and exclusion patterns persist. True progress requires white Americans to take personal responsibility and join leaders of color in dismantling racial privilege. This means learning to listen to and believe people of color about their experiences, especially those speaking uncomfortable truths. For generations, white Americans dismissed racial pain as exaggeration. Denying lived experiences is itself racist. White silence remains the only privilege whites can voluntarily relinquish. Speaking against racism must become second nature in schools, workplaces, worship houses, neighborhoods, and families. This means critically assessing every institutional policy to identify racial inequity. Though challenging, silence means collaborating with racism and undermining democracy. Change doesn't arrive inevitably. It comes through continuous struggle. Obama's election opened a door, but walking through requires confronting how deeply racism remains embedded in American institutions and our own complicity. The question isn't whether one Black man can succeed, it's whether America can finally extend that opportunity equally to all its citizens.